We're going to be talking something a bit more gentle in the timepiece space. We have luxury watches. We've been talking about luxury watches and different brands and what are they about. And we've been learning so much about the watches, you know, how they're made, how you can get them authenticated. You know, it's just like a whole different world, actually. And the man who knows the world is from the Watch Channel. His name is Jay Wilton. How are you doing, Jay?
Very good afternoon to you, Benji, and thank you so much for welcoming me back into the studio.
Yeah, always good to have you. Now, when you come here, you always, like, how do I say, rattle of all these names like Rolex and Tag Heuer and anything that's Swiss and everything like that. And you said to me today, well, let's maybe do one of the other brands, which, you know, not to get less attention, but, you know, one of those that's up there, but maybe you haven't thought about in a while. So who are we going to be talking about today and where does it come from?
Well, today I'd like to enlighten you a bit about the brand Omega, one of the most favorite brands and one of the most famous brands as well. And they've achieved some incredible things, and they are a Swiss brand. As timepieces and devices used to measure time became more accurate, watch brands were born out of the 1800s, and Omega is one of the oldest of those brands. So I'd just like to speak a bit about them. They were first founded in 1848 by Louis Brunt, and originally known as the Generale Watch Company. This company initially produced hand-wound pocket watches, sourced from local craftsmen, and they used to fit the movements and put them in their own pocket watches and resell them like that. So
wow.
Interesting to know that they came from such humble beginnings.
Yes. We were talking just yesterday or the day before, well, when you were last here, about people putting in other watch parts to watches. So
yes,
it clearly has a long heritage, right?
Yes, clearly you're onto something there, Benji, and you might be the founder of one of the biggest watch brands to come out of the world.
Interesting. Okay, so you had this humble beginnings. When did it become, go from being that to being this mega brand?
All right, great. Well, to offer you a slight bit of insight, mm-hmm. Omega is the last letter of the Greek alphabet, and it represents perfection and success in the attainment of a task. And with the introduction of the first series of calibers, which they produced in 1895, that's really where the brand took off. Four years later, after creating this caliber, Louis Brunt and Fils became the largest producers of watches in Switzerland. Easily interchangeable parts led to the creation of one of the first wristwatches as well.
Interesting.
So it was late in the 1800s where this company really became a huge brand and took off from there.
Now, I'm really interested actually in the transition of pocket watches to wristwatches, right? Because I only have one or two friends who actually bother to walk around with a pocket watch these days, and it is kind of cool. But the transition to wristwatches, where did that come from? Do you know?
It was actually quite a rapid transition.
Mm.
So gentlemen used to obviously wear their fine pocket watches in their waistcoats and that sort of thing. Where the transition really took place was on the battlefield. So this happened in World War One,
mm-hmm.
and it was actually quite dangerous to be found on the battle zone, on the front line, pulling out your pocket watch to try to keep track of time. So they actually found that it was quite dangerous, and they had to evolve, and this is where they eventually strapped watches to the wrist. So you could keep your gun up and read,
fire at the
read
same time.
Time at the same time. So yeah.
Well, I think they've done a service for the world. I mean, just think about Apple watches, right, Jay? And like, imagine if you had to like put the pocket and pull out your Apple watch. It would never work.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So yes, a definite necessity. Another one of the reasons why watches came about and being put and fitted on the wrist was actually by Louis Cartier, who was flying with his friend,
mm-hmm.
and they were flying across the oceans, and he noticed his friend had to keep reaching down to pull out his pocket watch while he is trying to navigate an aircraft. So he also came up with the idea there. So it's quite funny, and it was roughly around the same era in the early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
where two ingenious minds came together and they thought about putting on a watch onto the wrist with a leather band or a steel bracelet.
And so Omega was actually one of those first brands that entered the space, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And the amazing thing was after the war, both Omega and Rolex used to award watches to any of the infantrymen that had lost their timepieces during the war.
Oh, wow.
And they used to give it to them free of charge as a token of their service.
That's amazing. That's pretty cool. So are those sort of watches still around?
Those are extremely hard to come by, and again, that's where you would really find the value in watches. I mean, those are now absolutely irreplaceable, models which are, cannot be replaced, and are actually don't have any price tag to them, because of obviously the symbolism in the world and in history.
I mean, that's the thing about these sorts of watches, right, is that on the one hand, it is a, you know, a bespoke timepiece. It's well made. It's you know, very you know, very amazing from a branding perspective, all of these things. But because they last so long, it actually has the potential to have this amazing story connected to it as well, you know?
Absolutely, and that's what you would find, is that a lot of timepieces actually carry on and they become heirlooms because they go on from generation to generation, and they were worn by your grandfather's grandfather and passed down from father to son, from father to son, and these watches will still be perfectly operational. And most of the timepieces, and in fact all of those of which we sell, will outlive all of us and will still be ticking for the next 100 to 200 years.
Sure, that's not too bad. So, and how do one, I mean, let's say that out of the sky, just at the studio over there, a plane by mistake dropped a whole ton of money, like a whole ton, and because that's probably what I would need if it was in cash. And you wanted to go about buying one of these, like a watch with an amazing story. How do people sell it? Because I'm assuming you don't go on eBay and look for, you know, the watch of your grandfather's grandfather was that was involved in the First World War.
No, absolutely. So the best way and the safest way to go about it is actually to come to our store. We have had the privilege of meeting some incredibly special people and finding out some incredible stories about their watches that have been passed down from generation to generation. One of the Breitling Navitimes that we actually had, a gentleman was awarded that watch by saving the whole aircraft and all the passengers on board when there was a fault that was occurred and found on the plane, and he managed to veer them into safely and safety, and had to land in on a dam. And after that, he was awarded a Breitling Navitimer, and unfortunately had no children and no one to pass this timepiece on to, and that's how he came across us.
So he, before he died, he gave it to you?
Absolutely, yes. Well, wow. I think he is still alive.
Oh, okay.
We got it quite recently. But, unfortunately, you know, he is quite elderly now. Mm. And, he has no one to give the watch to, and, he knows that it'll be best placed in our hands.
Amazing. I, that thing of giving a watch for an act of bravery, or, you know, used to be like 25 years in the corporate and you got the Rolex kind of thing.
Absolutely, yes.
Is that still a thing? Do people still give watches as acts of appreciation?
It is, actually. And one of the Rolex watches which we recently acquired was a gentleman who had been awarded the watch for 35 years of being an attorney at one of the firms.
Wow.
Yes,
amazing.
Absolutely.
Tabo, just keep on it. Jay is watching. Okay.
And we will award you a watch in a couple of years to come.
You got to keep going. So, okay. So Omega, that's what we're talking about today. Omega watches as one of those Swiss brands that literally went to war for the wrists of the nation. And I'm assuming though that at that stage it still wasn't, although it was a expensive purchase, it wasn't quite the luxury purchase that you make today.
No, not whatsoever. It was actually very affordable. And both Rolex and Omega were extremely affordable when they first came out. Mm-hmm. It was the eventuality of them creating this big brand and their pieces keeping such accurate time, and eventually using finer materials and gold and diamonds and that sort of thing that created the brand awareness and made them more of a luxury item. But initially, they were actually for the everyday man.
It's interesting how other brands have done that. You know, I think about like VW, which was the mass-made car of Germany.
Yes,
and
yes.
Now if you want like a mini VW, whatever, it's like super, super expensive, but it's not considered the everyday car, right?
Absolutely.
So how these brands start off with humble beginnings and then end up being, you know, super expensive. It doesn't happen with cereal, for example.
Absolutely not. But that is the beauty. I mean, these watch companies have such rich history, and they have been perfecting timekeeping for over the past century. From early 1800s, the last 200 years, they've been perfecting their craft. So you can actually tell, and it's fascinating to watch the story of how these brands developed and became the massive empire that they are today.
Now, the Swiss are obviously famous for watches and clocks, but they're also really famous for cuckoo clocks. So I want to know, do you ever deal with cuckoo clocks? And has anyone ever tried to put a cuckoo clock into a wristwatch? This is a very important question.
Wow, well, that could be an amazing creation waiting to happen there.
Yeah, exactly.
I unfortunately haven't had the pleasure or the privilege of seeing such a wristwatch or dealing with a cuckoo clock, unfortunately. But early on in the week, we were discussing Mr. Howard Zaxdean's wall clock, which is an absolutely incredible timepiece that came from the early 1900s.
Wow. I mean, my grandparents had some sort of wall clock, and every hour it would go ding, ding, no, like every single one. It was crazy. I've got this friend in New York, and he's crazy about these clocks. And you have to still turn them by hand, you know, wind them up. And they all do different things. So on the hour, like one goes and there's like a cuckoo coming out, and then there's other people dancing around, and they're all doing it at the same time. So the house goes completely ballistic every hour, which is sometimes like the studio. If I don't actually get everything done on the hour, then they also go ballistic. But it's an amazing thing what the Swiss are able to do with their watchmaking skills.
No, absolutely. And in the wall clock, they use the pendulum to keep time. So mm-hmm. It's the swinging function that creates the momentum. Whereas in a wristwatch, you're either using the quartz battery
right. Or
the automatic function, which is a rotor, which is attached to the back of the mechanism. But essentially, they are the same movements. And that's the incredible thing that you get to witness, is all these finer details that are put together just to keep time.
But those are battery operated. So what is the difference between, and how often do you find it in luxury watches, between battery operated watches and these the kinetic ones that operate off the movement?
Right. Well, you do also get quartz function is the most accurate of all the timekeepers, mm-hmm. Because it doesn't lose a second even over 100 years. It's perfectly accurate, and they actually use that to measure world time.
Interesting.
But you would find also quartz watches, they're slightly more inexpensive than the automatic functions, merely because of the craftsmanship that needs to go into creating them.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to an automatic function, there's a lot more parts that are involved, including servicing, and it's well-oiled, slimy, minute details that you wouldn't actually be able to see with the naked eye, mm-hmm. and would need a microscope, and that's how those pieces are assembled.
Amazing. Super interesting. Jay, thank you so much for coming into studio. And, keep collecting. It sounds like you've got a good number on the way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. And if you are looking for any vintage pieces, please do visit our website on www.thewatchchannel.co.za.
Yeah, you don't have to be a cuckoo clock to go there.